This is David Duke. This is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast Worldwide Live, and broadcasting tonight from somewhere in Eastern Europe, continuing to spread the word the best I can about European survival of our traditions, our heritage, our culture, our way of life, and our very genotype. We love the nature, the quality, the uniqueness of our people. And at the same time, ladies and gentlemen, I must say that unlike the Jewish supremacists, I don't advance my own people and say that it is somehow wrong or illegitimate or hateful to advance another people. I've gotten a lot of comments recently about the recent appearance of Lynx and Lamb on primetime and some of the reactions to it. And I have one specific email post. In fact, it's a post on stormfront.org, and by the way, those who want to comment in this program can go to stormfront.org, the town hall section, and post their comments. The thread of Stormfront Town Hall, the show that I do on a daily basis, has now over I think 700,000 or 800,000 views. In fact, it's running toward a million views. So your comments not only are read by myself, but they're also read by many, many people. And it's a great opportunity. It's truly interactive radio, and there's very few sources on the planet that you can do that and reach so many people with your ideas and positions. I also can take your comments and questions directly with an email at info44@davidduke.com. That's info44@davidduke.com, and I'm happy to take your questions, your comments, and your thoughts and put them onto this program. I also want to make a program note. Starting tomorrow, we're going to be appearing at a new time. We're going to be going in the morning for a lot of reasons. One, it fits my schedule better over here. I'm not getting enough sleep, frankly, with all the work that I'm doing. And secondly, and maybe even more importantly, going on in the morning, like programs such as democracynow.org and other types of programs, going on in the morning sets the tone for the entire day. Most people, I'd say about 98% of the people who listen to my program listen to it in the archive version at their leisure. That's one of the great benefits of the internet and this kind of programming, is that it's an on-demand type programming. And we will try to move soon toward iPod broadcasting, where people are sent the broadcast automatically to their iPods or to their listening devices, wherever they may be, and I think you're to your computers. And we're going to try and do that in the next few weeks and get that up to speed. But the program will appear, I think, let me see if I can get this right, at approximately 5 p.m. Eastern European time, which is, I think, 8 o'clock in the morning Central Time, 9 o'clock a.m. Eastern Time, 7 Mountain, and 6 in the Western time zone. And, of course, in Europe, it's corresponding, and it's going to be still available in the middle of the day when you have more listening time. And, by the way, our audience is really fantastic in Europe and also around the world. This seems to be a better time for everyone concerned. And it makes the program more current, because if someone listens to the program at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, we're doing the program, you know, or until 3, the whole day, they're listening to the previous day's commentary. So they're not really getting a up-to-date commentary, whereas they're getting a current-day commentary now all day long with a 9 o'clock, 9 a.m. airing Eastern Daylight Time, which of course will shift when the nation goes off Daylight Savings Time. So that's the policy in the program. So tomorrow will be our first day on that time, and I would ask James and other people helping us with some of the posts to note that on our websites and change the times and be prepared for a different time tomorrow if you want to listen live. And also remember that you can post your comments and questions as we go along. So I will take comments and questions. In fact, I'm taking comments and questions because I had such a animated show yesterday. I'm taking comments and questions from actually a couple days ago to the present in today's show. And I've got a lot of things to say, and I think people like the fact that I'm really expressing myself with a little more passion. I'm not holding back at all these days, and I think you can be both intellectual and passionate. I think you can be emotional, but at the same time have reason on your side. And the truth is, as I've said for a long time, it's only passion that can save us. It's, as Dostoevsky said so fantastically, only love can save us, meaning the passion that love brings about. It's only an emotional response, an emotional character, an emotional spirit that can save the day. That is the thriving power of mass movements all throughout history, whether you talk about religious movements or political movements or social movements or national movements. Passion, emotion, and spirit. And what is there not to be emotional about in this crisis? We are literally losing our existence as a people upon this planet. Our people are being literally ethnically cleansed from their own homelands. We're becoming minorities in our own homelands, and we'll be completely subject to the political, social, economic, spiritual will, artistic will of people who were tiny minorities in America. Now, I know a lot of you will cheer that because a lot of Europeans and people of European descent and Americans have been brought up with a self-hate. They have been taught self-hate by our multicultural media. We grew up with this incredible brainwashing about the battles we had with the Indian race upon this planet, the nature of slavery in the colonies and in the Old South, and in fact all over America, because slavery was practiced both North and South. And even up to the war between the states, really the war of northern aggression, I always call it, during that war you even had slavery in some of the Union states. That's correct. I mean, a lot of people aren't even aware of this. But we go through this liturgy of this guilt complex about slavery. And if you take any issue such as slavery or the battles we had with the Indians, you have to go into the context of the times and the world itself. It wasn't the fact that Europeans were so uniquely evil that we practiced slavery. Every people on this planet has practiced slavery, including black people themselves. And in Africa today, there are still areas of Africa where you can go and literally buy an African child. Slavery exists. There was white slavery that exists today, so-called white slavery, which is a slavery of prostitution, which is created actually by terrible extortion, threats. It is in fact a true slavery, a very degrading form of slavery. And where is the largest center for this? Where is this directed from in the world today? It comes from Israel. That's where it comes from. And white people have been victims of slavery before. There were whites throughout history who've been enslaved by other peoples, both by some of the Asian incursions that came into Eastern Europe and even Western Europe. At one time, Attila the Hun went pretty far to the west. We've had situations. We've had, of course, the Islamic and the Arabic invasions of Europe, both in the Iberian Peninsula and in the Balkans and in other areas of Europe, and men and women and children carted off to be slaves and to join the harems of these conquerors from time to time. There's no unique evil. There's nothing that makes white people evil because we had the technology to go practice slavery. It's not that I'm defending slavery, because I'm not, and I don't believe in the institution, and I don't think it's a healthy institution, not only for the people who are the slaves, but also for us. I think it ultimately weakens a society. It weakens the labor pool of a society, the talents in a society. It cheapens labor. It retards development in many ways, and it puts in the presence of in a country the presence of an alien population group, which will end up causing a lot of problems. My God, Abraham Lincoln said it so clearly. He said that both races have suffered in each side. Also, when you look at slavery during the time of the United States of America, it was certainly a far more benevolent form of slavery than existed in Africa. And the fact that blacks were brought here from Africa, you compare the life of the slaves in America as compared to the slaves in Africa, And America had, you know, a very, very benevolent type of slavery as compared to the absolute brutality that existed in Africa, where life was so cheap. I just read a different, I just read a report recently about slavery, done by a liberal, by the way, and they discussed the fact. They discussed the fact that after slavery was banned, or the importation of slaves were banned coming into the United States, in on this continent in the early part of the 19th century, and the price of slaves went up very, very dramatically. The treatment of slaves also, you know, was exceptionally good, because these slaves, which could cost as much as $2,000 or $3,000 or even $4,000 or $5,000 in those times, which is a huge, it's equivalent to like $500,000 today or $1 million. These slaves, absolutely, were well kept. They were they had a very decent society. The masters tried to keep them healthy and happy. They had legitimate marriages, believe it or not. And by the way, one of the myths of slavery is that these marriages were broken up. But the fact is that they did have legitimate marriages, and almost never were families broken up. When children taken from their parents, or husband and wives separated through selling or other sorts of slavery. Now, I know some of you say, well, that's so what, you know, that's a small thing, but it's not such a small thing. If you read Time on the Cross by Fogelman and Ingerman, who, two Jewish liberals, by the way, they actually researched the journals of the slaveholders in the South, and they show this to be a fact. They prove this point to be a fact. And there's so many myths surviving slavery. But it is important when you consider the condition of the world. At that point, slavery was not a universally condemned institution. It was considered a natural institution. It existed all over the world and existed also in Africa. And so at that point, actually, the white race, certainly more technologically capable, the white race, you know, was actually forming a more benevolent form of slavery. The worst part of slavery, and as it existed in the world at the time, the worst part of slavery was actually the transportation and the treatment of the slave traders themselves. And interestingly enough, and the facts prove it, and I can show you this in Jewish Supremacism or in My Awakening, and you can find all the facts, documented facts from Jewish historians, Jewish sources, the masters of the so-called slave trade. This horrendous passage from Africa where upwards of tens of millions of Africans died in the passage. The masters of the slave trade were invariably Jewish. I mean, overwhelmingly Jewish. And I can quote to you from Jewish historians that even boast and brag about this fact. And the truth is that all throughout history, Jews have been the greatest and most prolific leaders of conductors of the so-called slave trade, all through the Mediterranean region, for instance, this cradle of civilization. All through this region, Jews dominated the slave trade. And who writes this? Well, none other than people like Mr. Marcus, who was a famous Jewish historian for the Encyclopedia Britannica. And, of course, I also quote that in my book, Jewish Supremacism. But you see, there's no collective guilt assigned to Jews for slavery. There's no collective guilt for the fact that Africans practice slavery, the fact that most Africans have more likelihood of having a direct ancestor that practiced slavery and enslaved other blacks than a white person having a direct ancestor that practiced slavery. Less than 10% of the American population, in fact the southern population, ever owned slaves, and less than 5%, or maybe even 3 or 4% of the American population, you know, ever owned slaves in the north. And slavery was almost non-existent in Europe at the time. So as far as white people are concerned, a tiny percentage of our ancestors, you know, practiced slavery. Tiny percentage of them. A high percentage of blacks had ancestors that practiced slavery, which is prolific all over the African continent since the beginning of time, long before the white man ever stepped foot on the African continent. Slavery was going on. But somehow we're supposed to have a collective guilt because of slavery. By the way, the Jewish percentage of slaveholders was much higher than the white percentage in the colonies. It was approximately 40%. And again, I'm quoting from Jewish historians on there. Do you see how our program, ladies and gentlemen, those people who might be liberal or might be simply conservative but have these mistaken ideas of what slavery is and what it's all about, you see how they brainwash us into thinking that we should have some sort of collective guilt for slavery in the United States of America? And yet Jews are not supposed to have any collective guilt. Africans are not supposed to have any collective guilt. The Africans that invaded Europe and the Arabic people that have invaded Europe and enslaved many Europeans. And I'm not supposed to have a collective guilt. And I'm not suggesting that they should have a collective guilt. I mean, the past is the past. But what I'm pointing out, the double standards which apply to us, and the people who've applied these double standards, who've maintained these double standards, who've brainwashed us in this capacity, have their own agenda. And their own agenda is one of supremacism. As I said, they basically maintain and cover up the greatest system of human misery, compulsion, degradation, and slavery in the world today. And that's the white slave trade, which is primarily emerging out of Eastern Europe. And most of these slaveholders, they call it the Russian Mafia, but ladies and gentlemen, they are not Russian. They are absolutely not Russian. They're overwhelmingly Jewish. And the facts can be easily proven in this matter. It's not difficult to prove. But you see, it's not good public relations for these Jewish extremists to talk about this fact or have this fact talked about in the national media or have this fact talked about in the movies. Oh, they make movies about Italian gangsters. They don't make many movies about, for instance, Meyer Lansky, who was the biggest organized criminal in the United States for most of the 20th century. He makes his career, spanning over 60 or 70 years, made the career of Al Capone look like a little field mouse compared to an elephant. I mean, this guy, and yet there's no movies about his murderous and horrible gangsterous ways. Again, the double standards are incredible. The worst and most dangerous organization in the world in terms of organized crime is, in fact, the so-called Red Mafia, or the Organistria, or is called in our press often the Russian Mafia, which is a double lie. It's not Russian, and at the same time, it's Jewish. It's a slander against the Russian people. We are so brainwashed. They decide what is hate and what isn't. They decide what people should feel guilty and what people should not feel guilty. Now, going from that, I'm going to go directly to a post from Free Zundel Now. And he has an article. He said, "Who decides what is hate and what isn't?" Let me share this with you with some of my own commentary as well. This is what he writes. Fresh and Blue was a topic last night in Hannity and Combs. Of course, it was a complete setup. Here, Hannity poster, Byzantine, a Jew, has been calling Prussian Blue's web host to see if he can cancel their account. Here we go. The Drudge Report at this moment linking to two stories that by themselves aren't very interesting, but when taken together are most revealing. Let's start with a story titled, "Young Singers Spread Racist Hate." It's about a pair of twin 13-year-old girls who call themselves Prussian Blue and sing about white nationalism. Or at least that's what the story claims they sing about. And it's laced with captions like, quote, "teaching hate," or, quote, "a taste of hate," that suggest that the writer, producer, really wants to believe that these are really hateful 13-year-old girls. The only thing is, they can't really make the case for that. There is this quote attributed to one of the girls, which reads, quote, "We're proud of being white. We just want to keep being white," said Lynx. "We want our people to stay white. We don't want to just be, you know, a big muddle. We just want to preserve our race." Is that hate? Now, I ask this because Drudge links to another story on the same page titled "Palm Beach County, More Jewish Than New York," from which it can be quoted, quote, "If Jews can assert their heritage by going to a show at the Kravis featuring a Jewish comedian or by enjoying a bowl of matzo ball soup at their local deli, they may not feel the need to join a synagogue," local Jewish leaders say. Add to that the challenges that the religion has faced in recent decades from interfaith marriages. Clearly, the desire is being expressed that the Jews continue to marry other Jews. That, to paraphrase Lynx and Lamb, and this is my commentary to Zundel's article, he says that the Jews want to be proud to be Jews. They want to keep being Jews. They want to they want their people to stay Jews. They don't want their people to become a big muddle. They want to preserve their heritage. Now, isn't that exactly what Lamb and Link said? And yet this is in the mainstream press. And this, of course, is not called hate. It's interesting when Jews themselves are the writers and the producers of so many of these articles and so much of this insanity and so much of this absolute hypocrisy. Nor is it hate when Israel, the Jewish state, has laws aimed at preventing Jews from marrying non-Jews, and even prevents the elite of the Jews, the Kohanim, from marrying Jews with any trace of Gentile ancestry on a genetic basis. That's a fact. That's the way it is. In other words, a Kohanim cannot marry a Jew who has any convert in their ancestry. In other words, they have to be genetically pure. That is a racial law. That is as racial a law as what existed in Nazi Germany. In fact, it's more stringent than what existed in Nazi Germany, because there they just really asked about the fact of someone being a half Jewish, and at the extreme being a quarter Jewish. If you're less than that, the National Socialists, the Germans didn't care. But in Israel, the Kohanim can't marry anyone who is even slightly or even 1/1000th Gentile. Zendel goes on to say, he says, nor is it hate when foreigners who work in Israel are forced to agree not to have sex with Jews. That's from an article, a very interesting article, which points out that, in fact, Jewish companies in Israel, when they hire some foreign workers to do work, make foreign workers sign no-sex contracts. Now, this is from the Guardian newspaper. All right, this is from December 24, 2003, not long ago. Let me quote you a couple paragraphs from this article. Chinese workers at a company in Israel have been forced to agree not to have sex or marry Israelis as a condition of getting a job. According to a contract they're required to sign, male workers may not have any contact with Israeli women, including prostitutes, police spokesman Rafi Yaffa said. He said there was nothing illegal about the requirement. No investigation had been opened. Okay, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Now, that is from The Guardian. That's an absolutely correct story. Imagine if you had companies in the United States of America that said that Africans can be hired or foreigners can be hired of non-white ancestry as long as they agree not to have any contact whatsoever with white women in this country. Think about that one, ladies and gentlemen. Do you think there'd be an uproar? Instead, we send American tax money to the same country that has those kinds of rules and regulations being exercised by some of their businesses. You want some hypocrisy, ladies and gentlemen? Our government supports the state of Israel, and the media supports the state of Israel, the same media that would have a conniption fit, that would go absolutely crazy if such a policy was exercised by any American company. In fact, that company would be sued, would be driven out of business. The non-whites could sue the company, probably walk off with the entire business itself. That's happened before in America. Typically, we've had many cases of white businesses where they've been sued for, quote, discrimination on flimsy pretexts in a city where most of the juries are completely non-white, and then they end up losing their entire business to this one person who said they didn't get a job because there was discrimination going on, or they didn't get their hair cut because there was discrimination going on in the barbershop or the beauty parlor. That's a fact. I can prove that. You know, we have complete double standards, and again, that's what this program is all about, revealing what's happening. I'll go on with Zundel's article. He says, readers who read my previous blog entry entitled Why Didn't You Know, where I'm going with this. Hatred is in the eye of the beholder, and in these cases, the eye of the beholder sees things through a decidedly Jewish filter. The Prussian Blue story by ABC News, the president of ABC is David Weston, who is Jewish. ABC News, of course, is owned by the Disney Corporation. The president of Disney is Robert Iger, who is Jewish. The chairman of the board of Disney is still Michael Eisner, who is a Jew as well. A news organization that answers exclusively to Jews sees hatred in one race expressing a desire to foster racial identity, but declines to see the same when their own expresses the very same desire. And again, let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. Almost every synagogue in the United States of America and every major Jewish organization in this country, including the lobbies that go before our Congress and try to affect legislation, all of them have programs to stop and prohibit and limit intermarriage between Jews and non-Jews. But if two girls, two young 13-year-old girls, express their desire for their race to be preserved, their heritage to be preserved, then they're called haters and bigots. It's worth noting also, Zundel says, that Matt Drudge is Jewish as well. I'm interspersing my commentary in with Zundel's here. If by white nationalism the producers mean white supremacy, then yes, I agree that the implication of such an agenda must be considered hateful. White supremacy, as I understand it, means seeing to it that America becomes a nation of whites only. In fact, it means more than that. It means white supremacy over minorities in every capacity. on the basis that it's God's will, something that implies that everybody else is made to leave. And it isn't difficult to imagine what apparatus would be employed to make that happen. One can imagine that from the movies. White separatism, on the other hand, is quite a bit different. As I understand the term, it's about whites seeking to live amongst other whites. I don't find that to be necessarily hateful. After all, if you look at most civilizations around the world, you'll see that the vast majority of people live amongst their own race, their own people. The Chinese certainly do. The Africans in Africa certainly do. You know, that's my commentary. The complication here is that, in America at least, we have groups like Native Americans and African Americans who've been historically denied that choice and continue to bear hardship because of it, in the context of creating opportunities for equality for those who still suffer from their ancestors' inability to exercise free choice to the extent that such a thing exists. The idea that whites should continue to seek to live amongst themselves is worrisome. But is it hateful? No, I don't believe that. And let me make a comment here. I think that there's nothing wrong with whites working toward the idea of having their own nation and trying to help blacks and other minorities work toward that same ideal. And I think it's a beautiful concept for people. It's not about hatred. It's about preserving the differences that God has wrought upon this planet, or nature has wrought, however you choose. Whether you choose to believe that nature did this, or whether you choose that God did it, God certainly, or nature certainly, one of the two, there's only two choices you have, made, unless you have some sort of alien interpretation or or flying saucer interpretation of the development of the earth. The point is, however it was created, the earth was created with different races, different peoples, and they created different societies, different cultures, different languages. And I think it's hateful to try to destroy those languages, those unique cultures, those unique expressions of life, those unique expressions of culture, of heritage, of music, of art, of literature. And I think the alternative scenario, the image that is being presented in the world today of how the world should be, this, you know, Walmart in every corner, this McDonald's in every corner eating this horrible food. You ever see the movie, you know, Super Size Me? You know how damaging the food is that you get at McDonald's? And yet this is the new world order. The new world order will only destroy and crush any sense of democracy. And by the way, as you know by now, if you listen to this broadcast very regularly, democracy is nothing but a colossal lie. Because democracy, the voting patterns, are controlled by a tiny, tiny minority of people who have the money and the influence to create those disruptive and deceptive television commercials and have the money to influence our politics through these special interests. You know, when I ran for governor and senator of my state of Louisiana, I did not take one penny of PAC money. Not one penny of PAC money, special interest money, because I saw in the legislature firsthand that it's nothing more than bribery. See, it's bribery when some company says, I'm going to give you all this money in campaign contributions or support your party if you support us in these policies. It's nothing more than bribery. That representative should be representing exclusively his own conscience of what's best for his people and this people back home. And sometimes it's a balance. Sometimes an elected official has to be courageous and has to decide what he thinks is best for his people back home. But at least he should be freely elected, not with massive influence and money. And his decision should be about not who's giving him money, but it should be about what's best for the people of his district and the people he represents. That's what democracy is supposed to be all about. It's not about that today. It's about mass politics. It's about people voting for someone they don't even know. They judge him by how the media portrays him and how the commercials they see on television portrays that individual. And that's no way to decide. That's so far a cry from the democratic principles on which we call democracy, the Athenian principles, that it's a joke, it's a laugh. And we don't have that anymore, ladies and gentlemen. Now, it is still possible to do some raids on this democracy and the soft underbelly of it, and that's on the local elections. I talked about that yesterday, and I will talk about that in further days. We should run for office. But anyway, I'm going to go ahead and let me finish this article and then move on a couple more, and then we're going to call it a day. I'm going to try not to run over too much over time. I've got a lot of work to do here. You know, I've got my lecturing, I've got my work, I've got my writing. I'm still trying to get some posts together for our website. I usually start doing that more prolifically while I'm in this part of the world. I have a little more time. We've got some very good friends who are helping work on my property back home that was Katrina damaged. Robert Moore is one of those individuals, and those people who have any damage on their homes as well, I urge them to contact him. He'll be finished with our work very soon, probably a week or two. And also contact my good friend, who is Howie Farrell. And you can get his, send me an email. I'll be happy to send you his phone number. And if you have any work needed to be done, you know, send him some work. I think it's so important. Okay, this this is Friesen Del Now. He says, so getting back to hatred for a moment, if a white supremacist is somebody who believes that God meant for white people to rule this land and therefore they're entitled to use violence and drive all of us from it, doesn't that mean that we should describe those Jews who advanced the notion of the Jewish state as opposed to a Jewish homeland as Jewish supremacists? They see the land as being given to them by God, and that therefore they have the right to use violence or anything else against all others who would stake claim to it, even the people that live there, that they themselves have dispossessed. Somebody please tell me, what is the difference? Why is hatred expressed by Jewish supremacists any less offensive than that expressed by so-called white supremacists? And how do Jews in the media here in America get away with continually pointing out white hatred while never paying attention to Jewish hatred in Israel, even though it can be reasonably argued that is the reason we've been made to fight their so-called war on terror? Yeah, I know. We're there because of the oil, too. Well, I don't believe that. I don't think we're there because of the oil. We could buy the oil. We could have bought the oil from Saddam Hussein. This has nothing to do with oil, except maybe that pipeline of oil going from Iraq to Israel. But you know what? Bush is on his way out. Come 2008, Carl and Libby and Condoleezza and Rummy and Cheney and the Dillard himself will all be gone. But Sulzberger will still be there, and though Judy Miller is certain to be gone, there's lots more where she came from. Most of the bad guys are going to stick around. Heck, Judy Miller might be, you know, a columnist or a commentator on Fox News. That's how that works. We can keep them in check. We just need to be willing to call them on their hatred if and when they show it. Who decides what's hate and what isn't? People who have the moral clarity to see it and the personal courage to speak out when they do. Thank you, Friesen Del Now. It was a great letter and a great commentary. Couldn't have written it better myself. And I tell you the truth, that is something that we've really got to stress to our people, is the language, this language that they try to argue. They try to call us white supremacists. They call us white racists, and they call us haters. Hater is a term much like the term blasphemy that is used in the Middle Ages to stifle intellectual thought or even scientific inquiry. It means nothing. It doesn't stand for anything. And we have now, of course, Gemmer Rudolph, a very brave and wonderful man who's probably the most prolific writer in our cause, discussing the issues of the Second World War and the so-called Holocaust. And he's now facing a possible 5 years in German prison for intellectually writing politically incorrect materials. In prison, ladies and gentlemen, for exercising freedom of speech and conscience. And these people call the Western world a free world. Well, we know the truth about that. Okay, let me go on. Take a couple more of these posts. I'm going to skip forward a little bit. I meant to comment on this Zendel piece for quite a while. It's a free Zendel now, and he's another great individual who's facing time in prison simply for daring to question some of the positions of the Jewish supremacists. All right, let's see. David Fellows writes, he says, reason Dr. Duke cannot do this all by himself, unquote. Sure, he can't, and neither can a few thousand Stormfront members. We can only make a tiny difference. So how did the Jews succeed with their small numbers? Money's the answer, my friend, and lots of it. It buys power and influence and eventually control of the world's only military superpower. And it doesn't get much better than that. So now the only thing they need to fear is a group of people who think like they do and are willing to emulate their success. Are we going to start purchasing media empires, banking empires, major corporations, or are we going to continue losing ground year after year? Sure, it's not that simple, but these immigrant Jews had to start somewhere. If they can do it in a few generations, so can others. I think we can do it faster because there's so many of us, and there are so many of our people who right now have enormous financial and political and social wealth and power right this moment. We have to reach them. They are reachable, many of them. The truth is on our side. And At the same time, we need our young people to grow up and become successful at business. Absolutely. And dedicate their lives to this cause, and knowing that as they go up in the economic sphere of things, that they will support our cause with, you know, every kind of ability and even sacrifice that they must, so that we can take this message and create a massive consensus among our people that will translate into political power. You know, we've got to do that. All right. This is from Freeze Until Now. He's talking about the show yesterday. He says, David, in my opinion, you knock him out of the park at least once or twice a week. But I have to say today's show was a grand slam, very inspiring. Many thanks for all that you do. Well, thank you very much, sir. And, okay. Okay, then we've got one from Messiah. He writes a lot. I can't comment on that and get through many of these things. This is from Hawthorne. He says, Dr. Duke, I live in the beautiful Appalachian Mountains, but this means my internet connection is slow. I love to listen to your old radio programs, especially ones where you interview people like Jorgen Graf and Christopher Bolin. But it takes about an hour to download just one show. So I have an idea. Could you bundle a bunch of your old radio shows and put them on a CD for sale on your website? I think you could fit at least 50 MP3 files on one CD. It would be such a time saver. Thanks. So that's a good idea, and I think that we need to do that. And, you know, I know a perfect person to do some of that, and that is Mr. Dave Cooper. If you're listening, Dave, there is a project for you. You can take them right off the website, bundle them in some CDs. We can mass produce them, we can list them, and we can sell them on the website. And I think that, you know, it may be a very good thing. We can sell them for a nominal cost because we're really trying to increase people's understanding of what's happening in the world, and we can do that. This is from Wolfo Skits. He says, Rosa Parks and Dr. David Duke. He says, lately I've been hearing much talk about the greatness of Rosa Parks. I don't think I've heard one black man or woman praising her. Mostly it's Jewish radio hosts or other Jewish cronies. You have to wonder what the white cronies figure they have to gain from this other than to denigrate their own race and leave out Jews altogether, whom pass as white to the amateur. It wouldn't bother me if blacks were praising her because they're black too. The fact is blacks aren't praising her that much, and maybe, just maybe, they want to forget those days, just as any race, religion, or country would want to forget that they were once dominated by another people. Of course, these Jews love this kind of talk, and it's the same method they use about their own Holocaust story, only to produce a fresh new hatred toward white Christian people, and we will never see and hear why such vitriol, or simply love of their own people, was ingrained in such a great extent, and such a great people as the Germans, among others, and whom were and still are an absolute credit to mankind, to say the least, with their food, culture, beautiful country, inventions, etc. I don't see the Germans asking for billions of dollars a year of aid from the U.S. or from Israel, for that matter. Anyway, he goes on, and I'll make a point about Rosa Parks. I made this point before, and this is one of those arguments you can use with your friends, and it's so, I think, instructive and enlightening about the so-called civil rights movement in this country. She became the symbol of the civil rights movement and what the civil rights movement would create in America. And it was symbolizing the fact that she would no longer sit on the back of the bus. At that time in America, where, by the way, whites were the majority of these cities, including Birmingham, Alabama, in the South, whites sat in the front of the bus and blacks sat on the back of the bus. Well, Rosa Parks didn't like that, and she felt she had a right to sit on the front of the bus. And that symbolized the civil rights movement. But ladies and gentlemen, isn't it interesting the results of the civil rights movement? The result of the civil rights movement, after 30 or 40 years, we've seen the result. And the result is that not only can whites not sit in the back of the bus or the front of the bus, they can't even get on the bus. Think about it. Do you imagine, can you estimate how many millions and millions of white people in the major cities of America and across this great land who don't ride public transit because of the fact that now it is transformed into a very dangerous, unsavory type of locality? Think about that, ladies and gentlemen. There are millions of whites who can't even sit in the front of the bus, the back of the bus, or even get on the bus anymore without taking the life in their hands. And you have many people, millions of white people, who even if they suffer economically, they drive to work. Even if by themselves in their car, they drive rather than subject their daughter or their wife or their husband to going on these buses where they feel unsafe, or their children to school on a public transport. That's the way it is in our major cities. I'm not saying that's all public transport across the United States, but you know the situation. I know the situation. Let's not play the I've got the eyes closed game. So has the work of Rosa Parks really created so-called civil rights, or has it ended up denying the civil rights of the great majority of the American people? That majority, of course, which is rapidly becoming a minority ourselves. Someone quotes about the Tehran article, and he talks about the fact that it says Tehran, Iran, and this is from MSNBC. Iran's hardline president called for Israel to be wiped off the map and said a new wave of Palestinian attacks will destroy the Jewish state, state-run media reported Wednesday. Well, you know, I took a look at those reports, and I read them very, very carefully. And the interesting thing is, again, is that just a slight change of words and a slight reinterpretation of words completely changes the meaning of something someone says. I read very closely the statements of the president of Iran. And what he said was, he quoted what Khomeini said about how Israel needs to be wiped off, but then he said the turmoil that's been created in the Middle East will end up destroying the Jewish state. He didn't say that we in Iran have to go and destroy the Jewish state. He didn't say we in Iran will destroy the Jewish state. He didn't say that Iran must wipe out the Jewish state or the Iranian people must wipe out the Jewish state. He said that the conditions which were created by the criminal state of Israel, that what they've done to the Palestinians, the hatred that they have launched in that part of the world, he said that would result in the wiping out of the Israeli state. Now that is very, very different. It reminds me, you know, greatly of the old films of World War II. Or whether you're a fan of Hitler or a critic of Hitler, one thing they always show is when Chamberlain came back from Munich, and he said, and they show Hitler saying that, you know, this is turning in terms of Czechoslovakia, that I have no more territorial demands in Europe. Well, they paraphrased him and they took him out of context. What Hitler said was, is that I have no more additional demands than I've always had. And one of those demands, of course, was not just the Sudetenland, which was a German-populated land, or Austria, or the returning of the Polish corridor and that part of Germany which was taken from the German people after World War I by the very unjust Versailles Treaty, and it was really holding the German people in slavery and bondage in a nation of which they had no part, no culture, no heritage. And these people voted to go back to Germany. Hitler didn't say, I have no more territorial demands. He said, I have no more territorial demands than what I've always asked in terms of the reuniting of the German people, as all nations supposedly believe in the self-determination of all peoples. And that's, they took that and they took it out of context. And it's the same thing they're doing with this, with the president of Iran, and they're trying to initiate and trying to start a war. And let me tell you, a war with Iran would be a very disastrous war, not just for the Iranians, but for so many Americans. It wouldn't be 2,000 casualties as we've had in Iraq. We can't even control Iraq, a nation, you know, of one-tenth, I guess, the population of Iran, and without half of the Islamic dedication and duty that they have a sense of in Iran. And if we go to war there, it'll be the greatest tragedy and mistake that America ever made. And to go to war for Israel, which is what they're trying to have us do against Iran, would basically bankrupt this country, cause incredible numbers of casualties, and be the greatest disaster ever facing this country. I think Iraq is already shaping up to be that, in a sense. You know, Iraq is going to unleash tremendous forces, which will definitely affect our world in a negative way. And maybe the most important thing that it does, the most negative thing that it does, is it takes our attention away from the destruction of our own country within our own borders. The fact that our own borders are being breached, not the Euphrates River we've got to be concerned about, it's the Rio Grande we've got to be concerned about. And this war is taking our attention away. In fact, I've read some of these Jewish supremacists where they talk about that, and they say, well, they say, you know, we had the Red Threat and the Cold War, And now we have the Emerald threat, or the threat of Islam. They want to keep our attention off of the United States while European Americans are slowly dispossessed and America's turned into this squabbling Tower of Babel from which this Jewish hardcore, well-knit team can divide and conquer. And by the way, they say that literally in that specific language, their own leaders, and I quote them in my books, Jewish Supremacism and My Awakening. I hope you've read those books if you haven't yet. David Fellows, of course, said, is he serious, the president of Iran, or just playing to the masses? Talk about playing with fire. Are we ever going to get peace over there? And I think it's very important for leaders, like the leader or the president of Iran, to speak more clearly and to be very careful. They can still misquote you, but you've got to be careful because that's the weapon that the Jewish supremacist press uses to justify their wars. But Saxon 88 writes, he says, what do you mean, we? Do those that actively murder the Palestinians, steal land, bulldoze houses, perpetuate poverty, deserve peace with the same people? Like Germany being the only force to stand up to communism, Iran seems to be the only force to stand up to Jewish supremacist state besides Dr. Duke. So, good point. And we can go on. Penelope writes, Mr. Duke, with the reconstruction taking place in your home state, what are your plans to raise a new campaign for political office, considering the field, as it were, has been leveled to an extent? What are your feelings regarding Prussian Blue, and do we, as white people, have a legitimate chance to regain our legacy, or is all this effort being wasted? Have any academics requested your expertise or requested any venues for you to speak in the near future since you've been granted your PhD? I sincerely hope that your home has been put together and that you're back on track. Well, I'll tell you, they're putting together my home right now as I speak, and it's thanks to good friends who are charging me a nominal amount, and they're putting together, you know, my property right now, and it's going to be a big help to us. And by the way, I know a lot of you are just now receiving the David Duke Report. If you haven't received the David Duke Report yet, let me know. If you have received it, let me know. I'd like to know how this is getting out there because it was definitely delayed by the post offices. And it wasn't, I don't think, anything sinister. It was simply the absolute disarray and destruction of the post office. Our distribution center in New Orleans, of course, was destroyed. And all the mail was shifted elsewhere. And it caused a tremendous delay in our publications. So for over 2 months, we've had no publications go out. And we've gotten very little money in to pay the bills. So we have 2 months of bills, the mortgages that come in, the electric bills, all the rest of it. And, you know, we haven't gotten a proper amount of money that we need to pay these bills for this operation. So anybody that can help us now, and a lot of people, frankly, and I hate to say it, this is the way it works, though. A lot of people don't respond unless you ask them for help. You've got to ask. That's one of the old rules of fundraising. Well, those principles apply to the United Way, or they apply to Stormfront, and they have a fundraiser going on right now, or they apply to the David Duke Report and what I'm doing. People often ask, why do you ask them for money for so much? Because generally speaking, if you don't, people, they don't get the idea. And I hope that people will realize that we need some support right now. It's been a very difficult period. Not only have we had costs, thank God we've got some insurance money coming in, which will cover some of the losses and the property we didn't have insurance on. But we need some money to take care of the fact we didn't have any mailings, and we need some support to do what we're doing. I'm doing the best I can. Now, she says, what are my feelings regarding Prussian Blue, and do we have a legitimate chance to regain our legacy? Yes, we have an absolute legitimate chance to win this battle before us, and I can tell you now, I will be a prophet for a moment. We will restore our freedom and our heritage in the United States, in Canada, and in Europe. And I will say something that's probably going to ruffle some feathers, but somebody has to say it. There are a few people who are advocating what they call the Northwest solution, that whites who are racially conscious should all move to the Northwest and create some sort of white state up there, or white society, and that's how we're going to save our people. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't agree with that. I'm not going to sit up here and bash people who do that. If you want to go to the Northwest and you think it's better for your family to live in a whiter type society and environment, that's great. But let me tell you something. This is a huge country. And I don't care how many of you go to the Northwest. I mean, you're not, first of all, you're not going to get enough to move there. The people there are brainwashed. They don't have as many minorities. Again, the brainwashing seems to have more impact than those who live in close proximity. If you're going to give up the whole rest of the country, you're going to give up the government, they will nuke us if they have to. We fought the war between the South, or the states. You know, the South already showed that. These people are very much more, you know, dangerous than anything that happened in terms of the North of the time of Lincoln. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I mean, we cannot abandon our homes. We cannot abandon our cities. We cannot abandon our states. We have got to make this a nationwide state. And if all the intelligent or the brains of our movement go to the Northwest, where there's fewer numbers of people, then those people are leaving behind. They're the ones who should be organizing the whites who are in Texas and Louisiana and Mississippi and Kentucky and New York State and Ohio. They shouldn't be leaving for the great Northwest. They're needed there to lead the effort and organize and educate their people. What it would constitute, ladies and gentlemen, if we had huge numbers of white nationalists or activists going to the Northwest, it would constitute a brain drain and a leadership vacuum for our people. We need people in our areas. Now, you can still choose to move, and I think I suggest this, in an area that's close enough. You can still, you know, migrate by car. You can go to work 20 miles from where you live or 10 miles from where you live. You can live in all-white communities or almost all-white communities, all-white parishes. I live in a parish that's over 90% white and getting whiter every day. I live in a town that's probably 97% white with 97% white schools, and yet it's only 20 miles from New Orleans. I'm still near my white brethren, and so are the people in my organization that live near me. Yet we can still have a more decent life in that area. But if you remove yourself totally to the Northwest, you lose. Our people lose a leadership ability. And let me tell you, you go up there and you start to set up a town, or you try to control the state, you know, the government will come in and crush you. They will ship, the next catastrophe, they will ship 5 million African Americans to that part of the world if they have to defeat you, destroy you. They will not let you proceed. We have got to rattle the halls of government. We've got to get our people elected right here. We can't run away. So I don't agree with the so-called Northwest migration. I don't have a problem with an individual going to the Northwest because he likes it better up there and he wants a better life for his family. I don't object to that. Who likes the climate, the mountains, the colder weather, the rest of it, that's fine. And if that's your motivation, fine. And if you want to organize up there, that's great. And if some of you want to try it, that's fine. But I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you are, in Florida or Tennessee or Colorado or whatever, Minnesota, my God, be leaders for your people. Run for office. Go after that soft underbelly of politics like I did. If I can get elected with my controversial background, all right, you can do it a lot easier than I did. If you're just simply intelligent and courageous, well-spoken, and you take care of your body, and you pose a great example for our people. No, I am not for Northwest migration, and I think that overall it can be a very dangerous thing if it was practiced by too many of our people. If all of the white nationals in the United States right now, and our numbers are really tiny, to tell you the honest to God truth, if they all went to the Northwest, it'd be like a pinprick in the state of Washington. You understand that? It'd be like a toothpick in the Atlantic Ocean. And it wouldn't constitute huge amounts of power in that area if all of us did that. But what would happen to the rest of the country? What would happen to the outreach programs that we have? What would happen to our possible political activities? I got elected down here in the South. All right? There are many districts across even the South, which is the highest percentage of African Americans in the country, and some of the highest percentages of non-whites. Texas, for instance, is very Mexican, but there are many districts that are very, very European. You know, and these people are much more aware of the problem than they are someplace in Montana. Montana, they're enjoying the environment, and well, they should. It's fantastic. The mountains, I love the mountains. I love the Alps. But ladies and gentlemen, I come down from the mountains. I climb the Alps sometimes, and maybe I do some skiing sometimes. But I come down from those mountains. I refresh myself in the mountains, but then I come walk again among the masses. And our leaders and our people must do the same thing. So I think the idea of massive Northwest migration is a disaster. I think it's not good for our cause. And interestingly enough, most of the people advocating this are people that, again, sit around in their underwear, get in front of the computer screens. They don't have any open offices. They have no, you know, not even a post office box, practically. They have no headquarters. They don't run for office. They don't exercise any sort of political organization. They have no real organizations in their own areas. They just sit there in the commuter and say, well, we've got to go to the Northwest. That's the answer. Let me tell you, I think that our Jewish supremacist enemies would love for us to go to that part of the country and abandon the rest of the United States to our enemies and let the enemies take complete control over America. Yeah, that's really an answer, isn't it? I'm sorry to be so tough about this, but when I see things that I think are dangerous to our cause, I must speak out. And again, the individuals that want to do that, that's fine. But don't tell our people to abandon our Southland, or abandon our Midwest, or abandon our New England, abandon our Midwest, abandon our Southwest, and congregate in our small numbers in some place in the Northwest where the government can simply come in and wipe us out if they want to, and where we're taken away from our natural leadership positions with our own people. If we're not there to tell people and organize them and lead them, and we have enough people right now, as I said, if people would just get off their duff. We could have a group of 100 or 200 people in every major city, and with that kind of number, working in a campaign, you can get somebody elected to the House of Representatives who is uncompromising on the ideas that are critical to the survival of our people. Uncompromising. And that, in turn, would start a contagion, would start a psychological awakening among our people. That's what we've got to do, ladies and gentlemen. Not abandon. Not cut and run. Yes, we have to certainly secure the security and the safety of our children. And there are many white areas. I have no objection to an individual leaving an integrated neighborhood. I have no objection to a person seeking out a county or a parish in Louisiana or an area that is where his family can get a better education and he can have a better standard of living and life. No question about that. But leave whole states for one small part of the United States and wait for the federal government to come in there and sabotage it? No, we have got to make a multi-front challenge. Don't forget now, we are still the vast majority of the American people's population. And I can tell you, we could win even if we weren't. Because we have so much courage among our own people, so much intelligence. Well, we actually have to awaken the courage, but it's there. It's in the genes. We just have to have the inspiration. That's what we've got to do. We just got to. Oh, boy. I've gone for a long time, and let me get one last post or so. I don't think we have got time for that. I've already gone well over an hour. Every day I say, I'm just going to go a half an hour this time, and I get wound up. I'm getting wound up more and more. I hope that you like this approach. Remember, tomorrow we're going to come on at 9 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, EDT, in the eastern part of the United States, 8 o'clock Central, 7 Mountain, 6 Western. And so anybody tuning in during the day will get that current day's broadcast. It will be more effective. You can post your questions for me right now, and I'll be happy to read them and deal with them in tomorrow's program. Ladies and gentlemen, again, I thank you so much for your support. I hope you get into the David Duke Report. Remember, send me an email, info44@davidduke.com. Tell me your name, where you live, and when you receive the David Duke Report, the most current issue. And if you can, go to my website, make a donation. If you're not a subscriber to David Duke Report, here's the opportunity. There's a special rate right now, $50 for 3 years. This record, $35 a year. So it's a big saving, $50 for 3 years. And I urge you to, give us some support. Get our publication. I think you'll very much enjoy it, and I think you'll find it very inspiring. The articles in it are very good. Let me know what you think about this current issue as well. And again, I want you to also support Don Black. He's doing such great work. And support all the activists in our cause. We need a sense of unity. That's about it. I love you all. I appreciate the dedication of all those who are listening to this, especially those who are not just talking and complaining about the problems, but are really doing something, making some sacrifices, both economic, making sacrifices with their time, being courageous, standing up for our ideas and our issues. I thank you very much from the bottom of my heart, and all of our people thank you. I guess I'm the best-known spokesman for our people now around the world. It's been that way for quite a while. And so I think I can speak for our people to an extent by saying, our race thanks you. And those of you who are just listening and using this as intellectual exercise and kind of enjoying the controversy, you know, come to the recognition, come to the realization that this is not a game, that it's not an intellectual exercise, that this struggle is about the very survival of our people upon this planet. If we lose this battle ahead of us, we not only lose the lives of our own children, but we lose all the sacrifices that have been made by so many generations who came before us to build a better life and to build a better world. And I have a dream, ladies and gentlemen. My dream is a little bit different than Martin Luther King's, obviously. And I have a dream where we have a healthy white nation, where when our children turn on television, our media, they learn and see something that inspires them, that encourages them in discipline and honor and duty, that teaches them healthy ways of living and life. I have a dream that education, we have an educational system that will educate people to the very best of their ability, that will not only provide good and proper education and support for those who have special needs and who are deprived of some of the talents of normal people in terms of their intellect or their abilities, but also will make sure that those who have greatest intellect and greatest talent are educated to the basis of their ability, the best of their ability, so that they in turn can invent the things which can help those deprived and can lead us to a great new age, a society that elevates art and literature and music and architecture, not to the lowest common denominator, but to the highest common denominator. A society where we have the true sense of democracy. We have a democracy of those individuals who are intelligent and who are not affected by how much money. Where you have true campaign reform, where people judge a candidate on the basis of his ideas and his principles and how he expresses them, and not these fake commercials or how much money can be produced in campaigns, or these soulless mass campaigns that are controlled by less than 0.1% of the population. I have a dream that our people will someday have a society where we have a very clean environment, clean air and clean water, that our food will be good and nutritious for our bodies, that our kids will really be taught physical fitness and education in the schools, not some half-hearted PE where half the kids are sitting around smoking. I have a dream that we will carry, you know, our values and ideals, and not only in our own white homelands across the world, but even to the stars. You know, we don't have to have Africa. We don't have to suppress any people, ladies and gentlemen. You know, we have the ability right now, within a generation or two, to expand our lifespans, increase our IQs. We have the ability, you know, to make every generation stronger and better. We have the ability. We're on the verge of taking our people into other planets, colonizing. We have the ability to go across the universe. And that is an idea, a more beautiful, more healthy people, a people that live by higher standards, not a society of the degeneracy and the crime and the destructive soullessness that we now live in. It's a dream, but it's a dream that can become reality. What the mind of man can conceive, he can achieve. That's it, ladies and gentlemen. Please do contact me and let me know if you got the David Duke Report. Give us a hand. Give us the support we need to do what we're doing. Thanks again for all the people, and you know who you are, who helped out on some of our property and are still now working on some of the property down in New Orleans. Thank you so much. And ladies and gentlemen, keep up the good fight. This has been David Duke.
This has been David Duke for our heritage and our freedom.